for me, and they said they had no regrets after they heard of the great ministry they would be supporting me with in the coming years. Also, for the first time, a church in Oklahoma, St. Matthew United Methodist Church, Midwest City in Oklahoma, picked up support for me. And they said they did that predominantly because there were a number of Ghanaians, people from Ghana, who have been in the congregation for very, very long. And they've been part of them for the last 20 years or so, and settled here. So, and it's the first time they are supporting a missionary. They've never done a support for a missionary, international missionary, missionary outside the United States. And so when they had to make the decision, the Ghanaians influenced that decision. Again, they had no regrets, and they were so excited. The senior pastor and his associate, who is his wife, what are the names again?
Wendy
and Wendy.
Yeah. Yeah. They were so excited, and they want to look for more churches around so I can come back in 3 years. I'd like to thank you so much. And this is like home, honestly. And you enter and Mozart's potluck. I see the, you know, beautiful faces. It's so welcoming. And Reverend, thank you. Thank you. And I also like to say that we are grateful for, especially to you, for the Christmas gifts. They've been wonderful. I think I received that the very first time. It was the first time was from your church ever. And we have applied them properly. In fact, we used part of it last year to pay Tony's fees in Windsor, Canada. And we hope that we can gather all the resources to get him eventually to school. Thank you so much. And thank you, Johnny and Jim. Wonderful hosts.
Yeah.
Johnny has the strength to drive all the way to Ovid and back, and sometimes I'm the one who is not enough. And I ask her a little while, Jody, how are you doing? Yeah, but God has been so gracious and merciful to us.
Amen.
So tonight I'd like to just tell you a little bit about what has happened over the last couple of years since I left here. And this is a wonderful ministry. Honestly, I don't know how God chose me to lead this, but I think I've said about the Genesis before. Reverend Dr. Jim Galley, who most of you would know, was then working at the board in New York when they were in New York. And he thought AMCO does a great work in disaster relief, but he thought the problems in Africa should go beyond that. They should really deal with sustainable agriculture. He had some experience working in Nigeria as a missionary and also at the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture as a scientist, so he knew Africa's problems. And unfortunately, when he hired me, 3 months after he hired me, he had some challenges in the workplace, and they had to let him go and work from home. But he trusted, and he's so proud that I've been able to carry this through the last 16 years. We had dinner in his home on Saturday night, and we had really some really great conversations. So I appreciate that, and I want to recognize the important role he has played in the life of the people in Africa and also in our lives. What's the program about? It's about sustainability, and how have we gone around this? These are the countries in which I have served with some great degree of success. To your far left, Sierra Leone and Liberia, which were impacted negatively by Ebola in 2014, whilst I was here itinerating, and homeland Ghana. Then we have the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is a vast country without roads, and you know, a lot of hinterland. We did some good work there, and even though I've not been back for a while, the work we have done just keeps, you know, scaling up. You know, so even without my, you know, presence all the time, things are just going on there, and that's the idea about sustainability. We have also worked up there in the Sudan, which is a difficult territory, is Darfur. When I was called to go, I had to pray for it for several months, and the reason why they asked me to go there was that The uncle had an NGO office long ago, and they heard about Moringa. They sent seeds there, and which were planted. Nobody had an idea about how to utilize it. So they called the office and they said, well, Moses is the only one who can make this happen. We went over there, and by God's grace, things have happened. And they write back to me to say how happy they are, and things are moving very well. And we have also served in Malawi and in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, I think you know what's happening there right now. Yeah, the major goal of the program is to help improve the standards of living of people who are extremely poor, completely off the grid. Half an acre, 1 acre, that's all they have. Family size of 10. And yet they need to live. They can't put food on the table. These are the people we are working with. And, you know, women who are completely, very much marginalized. But by God's saving grace, things are changing. Things have indeed changed. And I'll tell some of these stories as we move along. So what is it that we have done? And I always say this. This is a great achievement. Unlike many development organizations that would have a good will for Africa, but would want to go with handouts, you know, and also even the United Nations. People go, they just spend money. You know, they have millions of dollars, and all that they need to do is so much was spent. This number of people were rich. Yet when they leave, no results are on the ground. Nothing happens. When they leave, people just go back to their, you know, old life, you know. But in our case, we have always approached the communities with some decency and some commitment and accompaniment. So they give us trust. We have every time tried to give them some kind of capacity building through training in every aspect of the things that we will do. How have we done that? I always also say, I'm the only paid staff member and have millions of people to reach. So the strategy that we have adopted in this ministry is to use farmers who have excelled in the work that we have done with them. We use them to train other farmers.
Yes.
When they hear the stories, the life stories of how they started from nothing, received the training, were empowered, and have now moved beyond poverty, and are making great strides, sending their children to good schools. They tell their own stories to their peers when they teach them, and that's a real source of motivation for most people to say, well, we can also make it. And most of them have indeed done it over the years. Every time we want to be sure that whatever we do is based on their needs. And so the technology may be as good as you believe, but if you don't use the right approaches, you would go pump in money, you leave, nothing will happen. That's the bare fact. So we want to base it on their needs and to get them to get involved in whatever they want to do. They need to make sure commitment to say, we're going to make this work. We're also looking at the technology. It must be as simple as possible, so applicable to their life. They are small-scale farmers. So if you buy them a tractor, they can ask for a tractor. And you can have the goodwill and give them a tractor. Come back 10 years after, you meet scrap, nothing. Efforts wasted, nothing achieved. So we want to tackle them, tackle the issues stepwise, right? So they take one at a time, they build on it, then they learn and they can develop things by themselves. That's what we're doing. We are looking also at the environment, issues of the environment. And for whatever we do with them, we get into deep discussions. So they have concerns about the environment and they want to improve it rather than destroy it. We are looking at the taboos of the people. What are their social norms? How do they behave? How would they consider this? Pastor Steve, you'll be surprised in Liberia for the first time when we began the discussion on honey production. We are told that women don't take honey. That was what we had. So we had to, you know, go in depth to discuss it. We only realized that because honey was precious and was difficult to come by, they excluded women from this. But when they saw the possibility of abundance, they left that completely. And women are now enjoying honey as well as the men. And last but not the least, we, for whatever we do, we want them to benefit. They need to benefit. We've taken them out of less than a dollar a day, and I'll give some examples of how far some farmers have come with the technology. This often has been an entry point into our programs, wherever possible. Integrated pest management is a big, big issue. Why? Because most farmers across Africa, and it's common wherever you go, are faced with the problems of use of pesticides. It's a big issue. I've always said again and again that in 2001, when we started working in Liberia and Sierra Leone, we were surprised to find that DDT was still available to farmers, and they used this. Most of them were illiterate, so they couldn't discern what was written on the chemical packages. So the application was so bad, they would spray, or even if it's another chemical pesticide, they would spray and harvest a day or two after. So this did not only affect, they themselves, it affected other consumers who ate their products. As a matter of fact, I find it so difficult to take some vegetables. But now I trust my farmers, and they can harvest the cucumber. We just wash it on the field, we can eat. Because now they are using organic means. And I'm going to build a little bit on how far we have come with that. So we take them through, again, we just don't talk about the chemical pesticides and tell them, okay, don't use so much. We take them through training on that. And that training takes 18 weeks. And what it means is that we're not dealing with a particular community for just every day of the 18 weeks. We'll select about four different communities in a radius of about 20 to 25 miles, where that farmer trainer can move around. So each community will have a day of the week for its experimentation. And mind you, this is the first time some farmers are ever having a kind of a class session, learning session. They've never been to school. So for them also, this is great motivation. They can go back home every day to tell their family what they have learned. And a lot of sharing also went on, especially in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The bishop in Tambo testified in New York when he came. He said, for the very first time, farmers of different faiths shared information. It had never happened in that community. But we had farmers of the Catholic Church, Christian, Muslim, different groups, atheists, all coming together to share information. And they have continued since we did the training. They have kept as a group and they have continued. So we have built coalition among communities, even though that was not intended initially. So what we do is to get them to select some vegetables, say what they're used to eating, and what they can grow, what they grow themselves, and then we'll get them to do practical experimentation on four treatments over the four different vegetables. So there will be about 16 vegetable beds that they'll prepare. One treatment is the chemical pesticide and the chemical fertilizer they used to using previously. The next one on all the four other beds would be the naturally found pesticide. And the third would be 50% of each, the natural pesticide and the chemical pesticide. And the last would be a control where there's no application. By the way, anybody knows about the neem tree?
NEEM.
Yeah,
yes. Exactly. This is a great natural biopesticide. You may find formulations here in the garden shops in Colorado, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's all over in the United States and in many countries across the world. But this is a tree that grows out in the tropics, and it's soon a nuisance. It's dispersed by birds. When birds eat the seed of neem, they drop it out in the droppings. Mm-hmm. And it germinates somewhere else. It volunteers and germinates somewhere and still just keeps growing. Uh-huh. And soon it's a nuisance. But it has such potency that just by teaching farmers how to make their own formulation and apply it to the crop, it repels the insects. Uh-huh. And farmers have learned how to use this. And I will tell a little bit about what has happened also quite recently. So the end result of this is that many of the farmers have now produced healthy vegetables that they themselves consume, and they have market for. They have great market for these healthy vegetables, and they're making some really good income. And this is spreading all over the place. Now, we want to give an example of Mr. Paul Pai, who is a farmer and also an extension person. He has been involved in work with us in integrated pest management. He excels so much. He's trained so many other people after his training, initial training. And to the extent that we had an opportunity of a training program in Japan that we are taking advantage of now. That's also paid by the board. The board contributes money to that institute in Japan. So as a matter of fact, the general secretary himself, Thomas Kemper, told me about this 2 years ago. He said, are you taking advantage of the institution we are paying, we are contributing to? I said, yes, sir, we are. But we have been patient. Again, I do not rush candidates there. When we train people, we watch them over a period of time to see their commitment. Once we find people like Paul, there he is in the training program in Japan, and Abraham, yes, Abraham, it's another from a village. We identified him only in 2010, but he shows such commitment that we have sent him also to Japan. He's already back and he's training in his community. That's Abraham doing the training in Japan. We have other people like Mike Tamba. His picture is not here. Mike is from Liberia, a very soft-spoken guy. We're not too sure of him in the beginning. Could he make it? Yes, but Mike has made it. And Mike is back to his community. He's, since his return, Mike told the story earlier about how he tried to go to college, but the war broke out in Liberia and he didn't have the opportunity to do so. So he burnt out charcoal to support his family. That's what he did. And then he joined our training program in 2005 and 6. And after that, he trained people, lots of people, and formed a group together. So when the opportunity came, I think he was the very first to benefit. We selected him to go. And since Mike's return, Mike has not only supported his community, but he's been found to be so good and hired by the Ministry of Youth and Sports, the government of Liberia, to a vocational training institute where he supported training. And for the first time, they went into large-scale swarm production. And it's a vocational school where they spend a lot of money on. But he said the returns for their swarm field and the poultry farm could pay a lot of the costs of the institution. He said he had used the organic means he learned in Japan to reduce the cost of poultry production by at least $5 to $10 per bag. And egg production increased. Now, Mike has also been sent for, you know, among other people, to China to learn a little bit more. So we want to say that from these very humble beginnings, we've been able to develop people, but we couldn't have done this without your support. And that's why we are so grateful that people like Mike, Abraham, Paul, and a few others who are already gone in their back are benefiting tremendously from the things that we've learned. One of the things they all have talked about is to introduce the construction of greenhouses. So in adverse conditions, people can still grow their crops. And they always say they can use, they have done this themselves, hands-on in the training, and they have the capability to continue. They just need a little bit of push and support so they can do that. They talk about, anybody knows what's the bokashi? Mm. Bokashi. Bokashi is the Japanese equivalent of the mineral NPK, but it's a natural form. They learn such things. They use indigenous microorganisms, and you know, and I was talking with a brother here a while ago. He told me what's also been done here in Boulder and Colorado to produce organic fertilizers. They have used different methods, and they are teaching this to their communities. And they gave me examples of what they used in Japan to increase the indigenous microorganisms use for the soil fertility. But once they are back, they find local alternatives in their communities. So Abraham says he uses fufu, and the fufu is a leftover food, which is a delicacy for the people in his hometown, and the bark of the shea tree. Shea is used for pomade, body cream making, and it's a tree. Shea butter, exactly. That's right. He uses the bark, and that's what he uses for the growth of the indigenous microorganisms. So what I just want to say is that Many of these guys have used their knowledge in ways that we cannot believe. This is real empowerment, and they are doing a lot. Whilst I was here, Abraham sent me a little text message. He said, Moses, something also has happened in our community. Ghana had an outbreak of armyworms. And so what the government did was to mobilize agrochemicals for spraying, mass spraying. But Abraham said he was going to do something different. And he used neem, hot pepper, and others that he had learned from our previous training, including what he learned in Japan. And it resolved the problems as well. So the community saw that. So little investment. The things are right there with them. Yet they come to the same results. So he's so very happy that the community trusts in him, and they have quite a way to go in teaching the community so all these various things. And this is a big one. That's where my great passion is. When Jim Gully started the program, he talked about poverty alleviation, but he also emphasized on resolving the issues of malnutrition in Africa. I saw this as a big challenge. But even in the most difficult situation, God will show you ways you cannot understand. And I'm so gracious to the Lord that we have found a great solution to malnutrition in Africa. And I talk about this all the time, and I want just as many people to join us in this crusade. What is this? It's the miracle tree. I've spoken about this again and again, but I will just reiterate this. This is a tree that is so, so useful. It's a power-packed, nutrient-rich tree. The leaves are so tiny and humble that no one will respect that tree when you find it. But research has shown that no other tree in the whole wide world compares to Moringa in terms of its nutrients. Just name any nutrients. All the vitamins, A, D, E, K, you know, C. The trace elements, selenium and all that are required for proper function of the body. The macro elements, lots of iron, especially for poor pregnant women. You know, it has a lot of calcium, potassium. All the nutrients are in their right proportions. It has all the 20 amino acids, and that is quite mysterious because it's difficult to find all amino acids in one particular food. Is that not right? But Moringa possesses all the 20 amino acids that make the protein chain. Besides, it has 46 natural antioxidants, 36 natural anti-inflammatories. So research shows that it also helps to prevent things like heart attack, which may not necessarily come from cholesterol buildup, but may be due to swelling, some plaques in the blood system. Using this is said to minimize that risk because it's, you know, it breaks that down. It's helps to capture free radicals that are released in our bodies. So it's helpful as an anti-carcinogen, prevents cancers. It's known to clean the system properly, clean the liver and the kidneys when you use them on a regular basis. In fact, what we have done is not just to talk about it. We have practicalized this. We have conducted training, not only of farmers, because when you train farmers, we are head of the Ministry of Agriculture and the Ministry of Health in the district of Bo in Sierra Leone, heard about our good work. So they requested us and we signed a memorandum of understanding to train the district, the nurses, and the Ministry of Agriculture frontline staff. And we have indeed done that. On one of the visits, follow-up visits, I found a Fatmata Gausa, who was one of 13 nurses who were trained. Already introducing Moringa, you can see the branch, she's holding it, showing it to women who had come for antenatal clinic. So by the time the women live there, she gives them seeds, they go plant and they use. So many women and children have benefited from that. We, on our visits to the outpatient department in clinics, we sometimes come along with a little prepared rice, which is the major staple of people of Sierra Leone, and then would mix in the presence of their patients, would ask permission and add Moringa to the food and get them to eat it and taste it. So when they go back, they just begin to utilize that by themselves. And in Sudan, we went over there, taught the women how to process what they had grown. The trees were growing wild. Nobody knew how to utilize it. As far as that fall, if we had not been there, those trees would have been left, you know, without use. But the women were so grateful. And I understand there's a great use of it right now also in East Darfur, in Sudan. In fact, the news on Moringa has spread all over Africa. In Zimbabwe, by the time we got to Zimbabwe on an assessment mission, we found Moringa growing. But some people had taken advantage of the good news and misconstrued its benefits. They told people, because once you use it, it also helps build up your immunity. So when people had HIV/AIDS and they used Moringa, they felt better. So some unscrupulous people, excuse me to use that word, tried to use this for monetary gains. Mm-hmm. But it had a negative impact because it had a stigma on people who grew the trees in their homes. They were identified as people with HIV/AIDS. So they had started cutting down the trees at the time of my assessment trip. But I told them, oh my goodness, this is a wonderful tree, leave it, we'll be back. So a month after, I returned to, with proper planning, and returned to Zimbabwe to conduct training. And since then, that news has spread really well in the communities. I remember there was a pastor's wife who was in the training, and she wrote to me several times to say she's used this to train many of the United Methodist women in Zimbabwe. So news has spread all over the place, and it's a great plant now. We did some cooperation with guys from Minnesota in 2007 when I visited the place. There's a guy from a pastor from Lucerne United Methodist Church, close to Minneapolis. He was in mission, a VIM team to Liberia, and met me and saw some of the wonderful things that we were doing. And so he invited me to Minneapolis, and when I went, he took me to Compatible in Technology International. I always carry Moringa leaves with me. And there, they had developed grinders to grind peanuts into peanut butter for developing countries that produce peanuts. But God being so good, I said, let's give a try to my Moringa leaves. Was a perfect fit. They ground the leaves nicely into powder. And since then, CTI has been promoting Moringa wherever they go. So this message has also been carried by them. But they came over to Liberia and Sierra Leone to help us with some grinders. And thereafter, Dick Fulmer and another volunteer, Edgar, who's going to turn 90 soon in, I think, the next week or so. We visited him whilst we were in Minneapolis. They came over in 2010 also and helped to design solar dryers. So these are dryers in which we teach the women how to process Moringa, and then they can dry the Moringa products in those dryers. Yes, so that's an example of the drying process. So rather than just doing a small sample, now many women can process their Moringa, come and use the dryer in the in different tents, and make a business out of it. So this is really growing all across Africa. Now, we have gone beyond that. Once we train nurses, they go out to identify severely malnourished children and to change their situation. So they'll teach them the women and mothers how to process and utilize Moringa. So some of these women would now use this and feed their children. And they follow a protocol. So the diet will not be changed. The diet of the children in the village will not be changed. They'll just add Moringa to the food twice a day, and to see how the children are growing. And it's reckoned that just by feeding 2 tablespoons of leaf powder to severely malnourished children will bring them out of malnutrition in 2 weeks. And that's how wonderful the leaves are. And so we've continued with the promotion, also with your support. Before I come to beekeeping, and which is the favorite one for Pastor Steve, I'd like to say that even though this was not intended, the good news on Moringa has crept into the U.S. Seriously, and I'm very happy about that. You gave us support. We did a good job out there in Africa. And the results are back to the benefit of people in the United States. As a matter of fact, when you use Moringa on a regular basis, and this is true, even though it's anecdotal evidence, we have tried on several people and it's worked for them, except those people who are who have low blood pressure, they probably need some caution. But if you are not a low blood pressure person, moringa is so good for you to for controlling your blood pressure. If you if you use this on a daily basis, it controls your blood pressure completely. It also takes care of sugar diabetes when you use it. It's just the nutrition that's in the plant that does all this. So we talked about this 3 years ago as I was itinerating. And I like to tell the story of what happened in one church. And I hope next time I'll hear some good miracles also from here. Thousand Oaks United Methodist Church in California. Thousand Oaks, California. I spoke just like I'm speaking tonight to you. And I stayed with my host for about three nights altogether. And so on the second day, then we had the talk. So the first day, I exposed them to give them some talks here and there, she and the husband. And we made moringa tea, they tasted it, they enjoyed it. So after I had spoken, my host, the lady, invited the group of people who had come to listen to the kitchen. And she made tea out of the moringa leaves I had brought to show them that this was really good, it tastes so well. And they tried it. I left some supplies. But thereafter, I remember whilst I was here 3 years ago, Johnny and I went to the Whole Foods store to look for moringa. And we found it right there. Yeah. And we found it again on this trip. You know, you can find moringa in the Whole Foods store in the various forms. Now, after I left, 3 months after I left, I got a beautiful letter from one of the gentlemen of the church. He said, "Mozart, I want to thank you for calling moringa to my attention." Because he said he had a condition for many years, which was a crusty growth on his skin. He called it actinic keratosis.
Oh, yes.
And he couldn't find any solution to it, even though he had enough money to seek medical attention. And so he took a step of faith and used moringa. And he wants to tell me that he had improved tremendously and virtually healed. And so the church, it has caught the attention of the entire church, and he wants me to know about this. And just on the side, I really want to tell you what has happened. He reads my newsletters. So he's told Tony that when he gets to Canada, you should just let him know and give him his bank account. He has promised to, you know, help him a little bit through, you know, and contribute towards his studies. Not only that, he's one of the biggest donors, single donors to the program. And sometimes on the side, he gives on behalf of the whole church and says, "Look, Moses, but I'm giving, but, you know, I don't want the church to know, to publicize that." I just want to, I'm just saying this to indicate how satisfied he has been as a result of this message and the use of moringa. So I have received news from other churches, Westchester United Methodist Church, also in California, and some churches in North Carolina have been impressed with this. And on this trip, some have talked about the possibility of beginning marketing. Because we have left the market, we have done a great job in training, but we have left the market to others. So they think the United Methodist Church should get involved in this. And one church in North Carolina thinks they will begin by taking products from us and repackaging them nicely and make it available at least to the United Methodist family across the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's how far we are making progress. Mm-hmm. Now, Pastor Steve,
yes, sir.
That is your big one. The beekeeping, yes. Why did we get involved in beekeeping? You know, bees are responsible for 2/3 of our food bite, and Reverend Steve can talk a lot more about that than myself. But what we found in our early days of work was that even though people loved honey, it was difficult for them to come by. So men would go out into the woods to kill the bees in order to take the honey and sell, and that was unhygienic. And besides, that was danger to the environment. That was destruction of the population of bees that would likely impact negatively on food security across the world. So we tried to work on that. What have we done? We have conducted training. Our training takes 2 weeks. 2 weeks of training is enough to transform a community. We start with maybe 15 people from a village. But this, once they get committed, if 10 of them take this up, it becomes a business soon and people make great benefits. So an example of a training program held recently. Now, women were so scared about beekeeping because our bees are very ferocious. It's unlike the Americanized American bees, which are gentle and those are very ferocious. So you need to be very to protect yourself well. But the women were so scared about that. But when they saw the flow of honey and the amount of money that people made who got involved into beekeeping, they said they cannot be left alone. So they've now joined, and women are now involved. In fact, we are our first female beekeeping trainer who comes from Sierra Leone. She's now available to the entire Sierra Leone. She's used by other nonprofits, you know, who engage her for a fee to train others, go out to harvest, and we are so pleased about this outcome. We are impacting the entire world. I cannot tell the numbers that we have impacted because it's just a great multiplying effect. So one farmer may be impacting more than 100 other people after their training. And this is massive in these countries. So that's an example of a completed Kenya top bar hive. So young children who are off school now during the holidays are helping their parents. Their parents who are farmers have now found this as a very lucrative business and are getting involved in this. Abraham Bresser tells me that she had been farming for 20 years but had not made such great profit in a season as from beekeeping. And he said, "Where have I been all this time?" But, you know, God's time is always the best.
Lucrative
business, that's right. So that's Abraham. He started from zero. He's now made about 30 beehives in his apiary. And that's a wonderful leap in his income. And he sent his two girls to, one to training college, another one to nursing training college, teacher training college and nursing training college. And so there's a lot of progress being made. That's Salama too, and Esther. Esther is the one in the pink dress who is our beekeeping, female beekeeping trainer. And Salama too is now marketing honey in their villages.
Now you see on the table the different colors.
Yes.
That may be from different seasons or different crops that the nectar is being attracted or collected from by the bees. The darker tends to be later in the season, at least here in the United States. That's true.
Very well. That's the expert. Yes. In fact, as a matter of fact, discussions are ongoing in North Carolina, seriously. And they think we should build on this. They are thinking about introducing the Langstrom hive to our farmers. It's the pros and the cons. But again, I've asked them to let's tread slowly. Let's not rush into this. So my suggestion to them was that even though they have the resources to do this, let's deal now with the farmers who have already received training in using the Kenya Toba hive and who, as criterion, who have more than 15 beehives invested by themselves, so that the people we should train. And so they can make comparisons between the production by Langstrom hives and the production by their Kenya Toba and make their own informed choices.
Selma, if you go back two slides, there we go. See the difference? I think they're putting wax in the groove there. That's what the bees begin with. To pull out a frame. And the reason you have those different boards is because it's called bee space. The bees will naturally make a piece of comb honey from top to bottom based on that bee space. And it's removable so that you can manage the hive. And a Langstroth hive, it has frames in it like that are already pre-made so that you can manage the bees in the hive. And I don't know, six of one, half dozen of another, which one is better, but you want removable pieces so that you can pull enough honey off without taking too much, so that you can split the hive and add a queen and get a second hive.
Oh.
It's all kinds of management pieces. Mm-hmm. That's why that conversation about Langstroth and Kenyan top bar hives is important. How are you managing your bees? Because you can't just have them. You have to manage them.
It's okay.
Steve.
Sir.
Mojok, I'm no authority on bees at all, but I've read the last few years that pesticides and other threats have greatly reduced the bee population both in Africa and here in America. Are we at any critical stage, or has that been reversed, or what's happening with the ecology piece of this?
A lot of those hives, a lot of the bee species they're talking about are native bee species. that are being impacted. Honeybee species, because they're useful to human beings, we figured out how to replace the losses pretty quick. But it's the native species. And, you know, if you like native flowers, the bees that are native are uniquely formed in order to pollinate those as opposed to a honeybee. So that's what you're reading. But in at least in the United States, we can replace, by manipulating the hive, we can replace the queens and the hives pretty efficiently. I don't know what it's like in Africa, but this is what I think we've been reading about.
Thanks so much. Someone just reminded me to go back and show something that I didn't talk about. Yeah, you see the bee suit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. What we learned from the books was to use a khaki suiting. And that's what we taught to the farmers in the beginning of our training. But our master trainer in beekeeping, who is a farmer, went and tried this. And he said, no, Moser, this is so tough because the conditions on the farm are so hot and humid that it's so difficult to be in that suit and harvest as much as you would have wished to on a particular harvest day. So what he did was he designed this bee suit. It's his design, the farmer's design. And we found it to be very appropriate, and that's what we are using and using for training right now across Africa. It's a double-layered mosquito netting. Mosquito, normal nylon mosquito netting meant for mosquito proofs against mosquitoes in the window. And that's what he used, and it worked out so well. And he also said, because he learned that when the bee stinks, once it leaves the stink, the bee goes to die.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that he wants to also prevent this. And so with this, the bees are unable to leave their sting when they attempt to sting through the apparel. So this is what we are using right now.
The normal bee suit is like a thick pair of blue jeans.
That's right.
You know, and almost like canvas that's
yeah.
that thick
mm-hmm.
and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So even on a hot day, it's hot for me.
That's right.
Here. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
I can only imagine what it's like in
mm-hmm.
100% humidity.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So he designed this and it's a good one from a farmer. Yeah. Okay. Right. So we have done other things also. And that's an example of the moringa being used now as a business. It's all over the place. People are trading in moringa, even though it's not the best packaging. Nonetheless, they're getting some good results. Now, most recently, again, like I said, we go stepwise. You know, when we have more difficult things, we start with easier things farmers can get results from, and we ask their opinion about what next. Now, this is what the farmers, after they've had our trust, they've suggested to us, look, Moser, we also keep sheep and goats. You know that. We have not gotten really good results out of this. In fact, sheep and goats are kept by most small farmers in their backyards. But they keep them principally for as a source of security. So in the event of ill health in the family, they can sell an animal. Or yes, even it could be joy at Christmas. They could now say, okay, let's have this for the family meal. We have enough. But this goal has not been realized by most of the farmers. Why? Because most of the animals die before maturity. And so we try to work on this to reverse this as well. What have we done? We have worked with the veterinary services to bring them into the community for annual vaccinations. There's a particular disease that goes around every year. It's called Pest Deputy Rumina, PPR for short. If you Google that, you'll find it out. It kills most of the ruminants on the onset of the rains. It's a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them a nasal discharge and very serious diarrhea. They become listless and soon die. So most of the farmers did not get the benefit of keeping the stock. But once we got this started, the communities that vaccinated the animals had more than 80 to 90% of survival, as against previous 10 to 20% survival rate of animals. And communities that did not vaccinate, they learned about the good news that had happened in their neighboring communities and are also asking now for vaccination. So as part of the support that you give to us, we go out to get the veterinary services. You have to fold their motorbikes, give them a little allowance, so this can happen in the communities. We've also not just told them about good husbandry, but we have taught them. We've taken them through classes in how to keep livestock, how to feed them properly, how to provide better housing, better hygiene, sanitation, and a whole gamut of things around livestock keeping, including breeding. Because most of the time, the problems are with inbreeding in the communities. They let the animals loose. So they are just breeding indiscriminately. And to the extent that they are breeding among close relationship of the animals. And the end result is that the animals are stunted and they don't grow fast. So farmers don't get their results. So we have done quite some work recently on this. I'd like to give this familiar story of a younger Gant as part of the results that we have from the community. Younger was one of the females from Liberia that we met in 2005 and 2006. Younger was so poor, she was illiterate, not respected in her community. She said she was a nobody. She used that word. I was a nobody at that time. But when she joined our training in 2005 and 2006, by taking that step of faith, she went through integrated pest management training. And as the training went along, she rented some land and tried this on her own. So by the time the training was over, she had a harvest as well. And the harvest was good. So she reinvested the little she had and seeds into a next planting. And she got good results as well. So by 3-4 seasons, Yanga had so much money, and she got her husband to join her in the business. Their lives have never been the same. Yanga has been able to send children to school, good schools in Liberia. They built a home. And building a home is not an easy thing in those small villages, because many people live communally. They live together, cousins and their spouses. Everybody lives in one big compound. But Yanga has transcended this challenge and now built her own home. Yanga taught other people who were not in their training. Gami Flomer is another lady who went into vegetable farming as a result of Yanga's influence. And she also built a home out of that. So many of them have done lots of other things that otherwise they would not have been able to do. And we are grateful for the support, the continued support that you're giving to this program. This guy shared the same birthday with me, April 14, 1958. So sometimes we just, you know, as we talk with the farmers and get their records, we also take their ages and just, you know, as a way of fraternizing nicely with them. So we became great friends. On my last visit, he said, "Mozart, come see, I've also built my own home." He also used, you know, the rooms were so insanitary. When you go to some of these places, goodness sake, you might not ever want to lie in those, you know, those rooms. So this is a great transformation in his life. He's built a new home. And there's another gentleman, Joe Gatte, who is a local pastor in the village of Ban in Liberia. He was so skeptical about beekeeping, said it can't happen. He didn't believe it. But when he joined the training program, he's never been the same. He now makes $8,000. $8,000 in a season from honey production. And this may not sound big to you, but coming from nothing to that level is a great thing. He has committed himself to teach as many youth as possible. He's making hives for people and takes a little bit back from them, from the harvest, teaches them how to harvest. So he just committed himself to making sure this continues in Liberia. He told me the last time was that when you come back, you're not going to sleep in the guest house. I have built my beautiful home and provided you with a good warm bed, and you can stay in my home. This great story is coming from Africa, from the support that you have given. And I end with Liberia and Sierra Leone again. When Ebola broke, I was here itinerating. I checked on a lot of the friends who had cell phones in the communities, their leadership. And they were happy that I could empathize with them. Now, the story was the same. They said that in those communities where they planted and used moringa, they were not impacted negatively by Ebola. And this is a great story. And I've challenged the General Board of Global Ministries, let's investigate this further, because the stories are the same from all those communities in Liberia and Sierra Leone. And so that's something that we all can join hands in to look into for the future. And this an outpatient clinic in Sierra Leone, You know, when you see how jammed the people are so closely, just because of lack of facilities. So diseases such as Ebola can easily break through, you know, through contact, and get many people and their families perished. I want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for tonight and for the good turnout. And I know by God's grace, this support will continue in years to come. Thank you. God bless you.
Any questions?
Those are our most recent. Before you, Ken Cruz was here from Cambodia. And Jim Cully also recruited and trained him. And he has done many of the things that you're doing. It's just so rewarding to be a part of a Methodist church in our worldwide mission program where cultures are being so positively impacted by people like you and those who are working with you. And from the brain of Jim Gully, you were at his house last night?
No, Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Jim knows how to pick them. How about that?
What a beautiful and hopeful and amazingly just exponential growth of goodness. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
It makes us proud to be in relationship with you.
Right.
Yes. Thank you.
So the Moringa tree, I know it started in India, right?
Yes.
And it obviously grows well in Africa. Would it grow in the United States, or are our seasons too much that it would affect the Moringa tree growing here? I mean, not that we want to take away from, you know, your export business or anything like that, but is it, you know, where else can it grow? Where could you export the message about the Moringa leaves to? I mean, could it go to other places in Asia where, you know, I was thinking of Myanmar or Bangladesh or some of those areas where they have so much malnutrition?
Yeah, first of all, it grows also in parts of the U.S. which have a kind of tropical climate.
Okay.
So, California, not in Colorado.
Okay.
California, I believe Arizona, and also in Florida.
Okay.
You know, Fort Myers, Florida has a complete research station that deals. In fact, they are the biggest, you know, researchers, you know, directly on Moringa in Fort
Maybe
Myers.
Maybe the Gulf Coast of Texas.
Yes.
Perhaps, yes, that's
yes.
right.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. So it's already growing here. I saw some pictures of, you know, farmers who had large-scale Moringa farms here in the United States.
Okay.
As I traveled 3 years ago when I left you and went to California,
right.
I traveled by train from Los Angeles to Santa Barbara, and I was always curious looking through the windows
yes.
of the train, and I found Moringa trees growing. Yes, I saw them. I could see from a distance. I said, those are Moringa trees. And I verified them, you know, several of them. So I told the churches that I went to that I saw trees, I wrote down the names of the cities, and I think they've checked back on that. They now say they can find saplings in the tree nurseries.
Okay.
In that's in California.
It
yes.
sure wasn't marijuana.
No, definitely not.
That grows well here.
Yes, and then the second part of the question, yes. In as much as I am limited to in my work to Africa,
right.
but wherever it's possible for those who go on VMI teams to those countries, yes, you can carry the message, you can carry seeds.
Okay.
And then help people to grow. And if it's possible, they need, and I said always that someone told me they took some seeds to Haiti or so.
Oh.
People were not enthused about it.
Okay.
No, that's how it starts.
Right.
If you don't give them training, you just give
right.
seeds. Nothing happens.
Right.
So if there's a possibility of us getting some training done there, that would be great as well.
Thank you so much. If you want to visit with him individually, I'm sure that while we kind of clean up, that he's available.
Cleaning up is good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right to.
You know, that's interesting what you said about input.
So I hear that's quite the thing.
It's almost too good to be true, isn't it?
Anything from there?
When did we stop? Yeah,
that's just my little store. And then this came from a small store. And this just came from a business store. Just the one over here on 28th.
So I'm wondering if it's possibly different.
They made us do this. Is nice.
Jerry Tripper, Bell's coming in.
Has a nice touch.
They're so good.
Come apart if I'm not careful with them, but there's one gal at Frazier that really likes to sell. So tonight I got up my courage and I made her just the friends.
That's why we love friends. But anyway,
what we do our trainings, we mention
That's right. You need to write down your secret recipe. I hope it works out. You better write down the recipe.
I don't have a recipe.
Yes, yes.
And it advertises as the first salvageable.
All righty.
We can take a quick look.
All right, why don't you look at it and hurry and see what you think? Otherwise, I don't mind taking it home and washing it. Pack up the tables and the chairs go in the circle.
There's a picture of the wall.
This one's got a damp one. Let's go ahead.
Let's just go ahead. Let's just go ahead.
Yeah. Gary will help me fold off the laundry when I get done with it.
So we're making a circle.
Yeah, this side
is going to be circular. There should be pictures right there on the wall. See how it works? That's how it's supposed to look. Here you are. Poor Tony has to help. I'm sorry about that.
There's along the wall over there.
And then kind of a big circle right in here.
The chairs, I know that there's a picture. We make a circle and then we snap the rest of them.
These go into a big triangle, a rectangle.
Well, and that side gets the table.
And I'll take the tables home and wash them.
Well, and I can take some too, Mary Beth. That's not a problem. But what we're going to do is we make a rectangle that's all goes along.
The tables go over there. Four tables over there, then they get chairs all the way around.
Right.
And we can replicate
it.
Yes, we can.
It helps to have Mary Beth remind.
Well, I happened to be here, so I remembered what I saw. Yep. Bye, Tony.
Yep, we have to stay in there.
Yeah, we are.
Okay,
it's
there we go.
Right. The farmer and the dell and the cheese stands alone in the middle. That's right. But okay, there. Oh, that looks good. You would have thought you knew what we were doing.
I never suspected that.
Yeah, don't tell anyone.
I never suspected that for a minute.
Finish up these and so.
Okay,
yeah, sure. Church there. But there's a case. Oh, VID is
out Highway 76 toward Julesburg. We can close to the Nebraska line, and the Cincinnati up there school, and so the teachers belong to the church. So she asked.
Oh, really? She's in the hang of it.
And the presentation there, and that's what I mean.
She'll come up with something.
Yeah.
Well, under 50th percentile, I'm late.
Okay.